Hi, this is Jerry Pippin inviting you to join me and Nancy Wallace in Albuquerque, New Mexico on Friday, August 10th at the Albuquerque Marriott for the opening of the second annual Wake Up Now conference. From the 10-minute opening guided meditation to the closing event on Sunday, you will be treated to a journey into awareness that you will treasure for the rest of your life. 60 vendor spaces, 12 major speakers, including Bill Murphy, Brooks Agnew, David Weatherly, Lynn Buchanan, Nick Redfern, and Patty Greer in person, plus a screening of her latest film. Check out all the information by entering Wake Up Now Conference in your search engine or go to the banners on our website at jerrypippin.com. This is a benefit for the Pace Setting School of Now. We'll see you in Albuquerque. Jerry Pippin!
These are unidentified flying objects. Are they proof that we are being visited by civilizations from other stars? Or just what are they?
For the old-timers in the audience, you may remember that television show, Project UFO, and that was the late, great Jack Webb talking about whether or not UFOs really existed or not. And we have a fellow with us that I've admired for a long time. I always look forward to his interviews. With us on the show is Stan Gordon up in Pennsylvania, and Stan's been at this about as long as me, and he's younger than me, so that means he started younger. How old were you, Stan, when you first started getting interested in UFOs and welcome to the show?
Well, thank you very much for having me back, Jerry. I was 10 years old a long time ago, back in 1959.
See, that's a heck of a lot younger than I. I was 14 or 15 when I started in radio, but you got 5 years head start on me.
There you go. Well, how I got involved, and I guess my parents had no idea that by giving me that birthday gift back at my 10th birthday during the Halloween season, give me a new AM radio, and I was tuning around the AM radio dial that night, and there was some radio shows talking about strange, unusual events, haunted houses and flying saucers and a lot of strange things, and I was curious when I was 10 years old, and I wanted to know if these stories were true or people were making these stories up, so I began to go to a local library and read all the books they had on the subject, and began to clip articles out of the newspaper, make scrapbooks. If something appeared in a local paper where somebody claimed to have seen something unusual, I called them on the telephone and talked to them about it, and I kept records of it. And I was 16 years old when the incident happened near Kecksburg, about 12 miles from my hometown of Greensburg, Pennsylvania. And I was not there that night, but I got involved in the incident immediately. And that night I was tuning into KDK Radio in Pittsburgh, because they had a talk radio show called Contact, and the host of the show, his name was Mike Levine, his guest that night was Frank Edwards, who had written some books on strange, unusual happenings, so I was tuned into the radio show, but pretty much the entire program was being focused on these reports of this UFO sighting that happened late that afternoon over a widespread area, including the greater Pittsburgh area, where they were reading the Wire news story coming across the Wire, they were interviewing witnesses. And it was at that point that it really got my interest, and I began to investigate the case from that moment.
Yeah, now Kecksburg, they're having, how many years have they had this anniversary celebration in Kecksburg?
Well, this is the seventh annual Kecksburg UFO Festival, and it's going to be coming up this weekend, which is July 28th and 29th. It's held out in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, out of Mount Pleasant Township, which is between Greensburg and Mount Pleasant. And you can get on my website, stangordon.info, for more information on it. But it's a two-day event, and it's very interesting because they have a lot of very unique, different type of all kind of special events going on there. They have a parade, and they have a classic card show, and they have their famous burnout contest and out of this world UFO hot dog eating contest on Sunday. And then also from 1:30 to 5, we have a free conference. It's called this year the Mysterious Pennsylvania UFO and Creature Encounters Conference. And there'll be myself and three other speakers, and it's free to the public. And so all of this is held on the grounds at the Kecksburg Volunteer Fire Department, who are sponsoring it. But historically, a number of the original Kecksburg firemen, which unfortunately the majority of them now are deceased, were involved in the operation that night, which involved the areas being cordoned off and the military coming in and searching for this unidentified flying object.
Let's talk a little bit for people who don't know about Kecksburg. A lot of people do, but not everyone does. You kind of alluded to it. It was covered pretty heavily by local radio back in those days. Tell our audience exactly what happened.
Well, we could spend days talking about Kecksburg just briefly. Late afternoon, December 9th, 1965. So it's about 4:47 in the afternoon. It's just about getting dark. And reports came in initially from the tip of Ontario, Canada, over Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. And initially, as I'm listening to the radio that night on KDK Radio in Pittsburgh, and they're talking about this, well, this became the major news story all over the greater Pittsburgh area that evening. And it's being broadcast on local radio and TV. And I can remember on KDK TV, the late Bill Burns was breaking in with live reports that the military was now coming into the Kecksburg area to search for the unidentified flying object that reportedly fell in the woods near there. And it was a very, very intriguing night. I wasn't even old. I wasn't driving yet, so I had no way to get out there. But I was running back and forth between the TV and the radio trying to get all the latest details. And then I was very anxious to see if it would be in the newspaper the next day. And it was the headlines in all the local and Pittsburgh area newspapers. It was making the national news wires. And it was quite an interesting event. But I'm looking at the local paper, the Greensburg Tribune Review, and they had two editions. And the morning edition has a headline, Army Ropes Off Area, Unidentified Flying Object Falls Near Kecksburg. And the later edition has a number of different stories, including one which goes on to say that searchers failed to find objects. And the story goes on to say that, yeah, there was a search, and they had looked around, but nothing was in the woods, and apparently people had been mistaken. The official explanation was that people had seen a bright meteor in the sky, and that was the end of the story. And there was so much we didn't know at that time that I've learned over all these years now since that case. I've been investigating it ever since that night. I'm still, on occasion, getting even some recent reports from people who had never come forward before, people mainly who were out of Kecksburg that night. Most of them were kids or teenagers at that time, but have observed, of course, the military presence out there. And
I was heard the story that one of the officers jumped up on top of this thing and started beating it with a club or something, and the door opened. Did that happen?
There's a lot. Let me give you some basics on that. That's something we found in more recent years. Okay. Here's what we now know. Okay. What we now know is, as this thing is coming in over the greater Pittsburgh area, okay, it's moving out over toward the Greensburg area, out towards Westmoreland County. And as people are watching this thing, it's coming in and it makes a turn to the, it's moving roughly towards the east, but it makes a turn to the south. And it's observed sequentially by a lot of people in these little communities, these rural communities, as it's moving out towards the mountains, out towards Laurelville. So what we now know is that this thing is moving relatively slowly, especially when several miles before it fell. It's changing direction along its path. And what people who saw it go down into the woods said, it didn't come down at a high rate of speed like a crash as such, but it made almost like a controlled landing. And moments after it fell, there was kind of a bluish-grayish smoke that came up, which dissipated very, very quickly. Now, what we didn't know at that time, which we now know, is that apparently a number of independent local people and kids ran down into the woods afterwards to see what this thing was. And what we know is that different people independently during the afternoon and evening, before the military got there, they came across this large metallic acorn-shaped object that's semi-buried in the ground. Now, we didn't have our, we didn't know about an actual eyewitness. I mean, we have heard a lot of stories over the years, but many, many people kept quiet. In fact, of the hundreds of people I've interviewed, even today, the high percentage of those people still have never gone public. And a lot of those people back then were children or teenagers, and many of them grew up to be very responsible people. They turned out to be police officers, CEOs, teachers, engineers, all kind of responsible people. And because of their position and reputation, a lot of them still don't want to go public today, but it's amazing how their accounts they provided to me and the little details, so many of them confirm other people's accounts that they wouldn't know unless they were there. But anyhow, it wasn't until 1987 when I was holding a very big display at the local mall on UFOs to educate the public that something happened. It was very interesting. We had a small display on Kecksburg there. We didn't have a lot of information on it at that time. And I was out for a sandwich. I guess one of my associates was there, and a man and he were talking about Kecksburg around this little display. And a man and his family happened to walk by, and they kind of listened in for a minute, and he said, excuse me, you're talking about that incident out in Kecksburg? And they said, yes. He said, well, I was on the search team that found the object. So, of course, they pulled him aside, got a hold of me, and the guy said to me right away, well, look, he said, I'll talk to you about it, but I don't want to get involved. I don't want my family involved. But he offered to meet with us at a further time and discuss it. And that turned out to be Jim Romanski, who never went public until we did the Unsolved Mysteries special on the case in 1990. And Jim was not from Kecksburg. But what he told us was, and fit in with other information we got from others, was that he was a member of one of the volunteer fire departments not too far away that was activated to come out late that afternoon to the Kecksburg area to search for a possible downed aircraft. And so he and a few of the guys got in one of their vehicles, and they got out there, and there were other firemen that they didn't know, and they were setting up this grid search in this large wooded area to search what they thought was a downed aircraft. And he didn't know the area, but he remembered them putting them to different trucks and letting them off in different locations to go up to search through the woods, and they had walkie-talkies with them. And he said they were moving around towards the woods, and they were in there for a short time when a call came over the radio that the other team had come across the object. So they hurried over. They weren't too far away over towards this farm. And anyhow, they're looking at this thing, and they're standing on a little embankment looking down, and here's this thing semi-buried in the ground just a few feet away. Well, they realized what they're looking at was unlike any kind of aircraft they had ever seen. It was no meteorite. It was constructed and built by somebody. But what Jim Romanski told me, and Jim had been a machinist all his life, and he told me, he said, it was a very unusual off-gold color, a very unusual metal. And he said the best way to describe it was it looked like somebody took liquid metal and poured it into an acorn-shaped mold. He said it was one solid piece of metal, probably 10, 12 feet or more in length, about 8 to 10 feet in diameter. But he said there's no apparent weld marks or rivets or fuselage. And he saw no way in or out from what he could see. But he said at the bottom, the raised up back of like the acorn on that he called the bumper area, there was these raised up markings that he said looked more like symbols than writing. And luckily, because of his family background, he was somewhat familiar with Russian Cyrillic, and he said that's not what it was. He said these were like symbols, and over the years after it happened, he spent a lot of time in the libraries looking at ancient writings, and he said closest thing he could remember would look similar to ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics. So what Jim goes on to tell us is this small group of guys are standing there scratching their heads trying to figure out what this thing is when two men come down in like trench coats. They had a little yellow box with them, which we believe was a little yellow civil defense Geiger counter, and they tell these fellows, you got to get out of here right away. This area is now quarantined, and right behind them are soldiers coming down through the woods. And so they found their way back to this little village at Kecksburg. When they got back there was soldiers back there at the Kecksburg Fire Department truck station, and there were military vehicles around. And so that was that one part of the story. The interesting thing is a year later, 1988, we get a tip that there's another local man who had gotten down there soon after the object fell, and he had never come forward, as so many people didn't on their own, because quite often we got leads like from friends and neighbors and relatives. And we followed up on it, and he verified it. Yes, he'd, he got involved in this thing. He was there right after it fell, but after the next day when the newspapers and the government said there was nothing there, you know, he just kept his mouth shut. He told a few, you know, some relatives and people close to him, and that was it. But that was Bill Bullingbush. And Bill lived down the road in the little village of Mammoth, right below Kecksburg, and he was out there that afternoon tuning in his CB radio in his car, and he happened to look up and saw this fiery object coming from the little village of Norvelt, moving out towards the mountains of Laurelville. So he ran out on the road to look at this thing, and he said, out towards the mountains, it looked like it kind of stopped or hesitated, made a turn, and began to come back towards Kecksburg. So he jumps in his old little Corvair and goes up to the top of the hill, which is now called Media Road, which overlooks the whole area. It's a very high lookout. And down in that area is this large wooded area, which he hunted in, so he knew the area pretty well. And it's almost dark. And he sees what looks like blue arcing down there. He said it looked like kids playing like with sparklers. And he figured, like, you know, what's going on down there? Whatever it is, it's pretty unusual. So he grabs his flashlight and starts to make his way down through the woods. Now, one thing I should go back and tell you a little bit of the story. Well, after we talked to Jim Romanski, he, again, was not from Kecksburg, but he offered to go out to us to the Kecksburg area to see if he could find the location. He hadn't been there since 1965. This is now 1987. My associate and I, we told him absolutely nothing. And one thing we did not tell him was that quite a long time prior to that, we had been after we had gotten more information, we had made a lot more thorough search of that wooded area, and we found what appeared to be a trajectory where we found from where the wood line came into the woods down to the bottom of the ravine, we found a pattern of tree damage where trees were knocked down the same direction, the tops of trees were broken out. There appeared to be a pattern of a possible trajectory, and we got a pretty good idea where we felt something may have come down, but we didn't tell him a thing. So we're walking out there for quite a while, and he's trying to remember from that night. There were certain details of landmarks, certain things he still recalled. And he walked around there for quite a while, and he said, you know what, fellas, I think we're right on the spot. And my assistant and I, we looked at each other because we were amazed because it was right in that immediate area where we thought this thing probably came down. So anyhow, we had that pretty good location. So when Bill Bullybush takes us out the next year, and of course he didn't know this other fellow Jim until when we were filming the Unsolved Mystery Show in 1990, he took us down from the way of the opposite side of the woods from the top of Media Road where he was that night, that afternoon I should say, and we walked the whole way down through the woods, all through that area, went to the opposite side, and he took us over to a particular tree, and he said, I stood right behind this tree, and he pointed over and said, that's where the object was, and was the exact place that Jim took us to the year before.
Wow.
And, yes, but and then others have independently also done the same thing. We know of others now, some deceased, some who were alive, who went down and found the object as well. Anyhow, just to make the story short, hundreds of people that night descended on the Kecksburg area after it was coming out on the news. And what's so interesting is you had hundreds of people that started coming in from all over western Pennsylvania to try to get a look at this thing. This is this little narrow country road. Hundreds of people on this little road were parking. They had picnic baskets. We had reports, people all over the place trying to look at this thing. But what they didn't know was that it fell way on the opposite side down in the ravine, and they couldn't possibly see it from there. Later that night, the roads were being blocked off by the authorities. They did see some military around there, but most of the military was way down on the opposite side of the wood, closer to where it fell. And that's where a lot of really interesting stories came to our attention. And different people have come forward publicly and have told us that night, a lot of these were teenagers who tried to sneak down this large wooded area to try to get down to the impact area, and they were stopped by armed military personnel. But some of these people have come forward publicly and stated that soldiers aimed their weapons at them to prevent them from going any further to try to take a look at this thing. So what was so important down there that they didn't want people to find out about? And So once again, you had not only the public, but all the news, the major news media, had representatives there from all over the Pittsburgh area. You had the major TV stations, radio, and newspaper reporters all on the scene. And I interviewed many of those reporters. Some of those guys are now deceased, but they observed the military presence, the military vehicles or personnel. Some interacted with them, like Bob Gaddy, who was a reporter for the Tribune Review. He was convinced there was something down in the woods, and he wanted to go down. And when he tried to go down, they stopped him, and he said, well, what if I get down? He said, you'll be arrested. And so all kind of neat stories. But in the summer of 1990, before we did the Unsolved Mystery Show, a fellow contacted me, and he had quite a background, which we were able to check out and confirm. But he told me, he said, I was on the Air Force security team, the Air Force security police, that guarded the object when it came in to Lockbourne Air Force Base near Columbus, Ohio, on the morning of December 10th, the next morning, during the early morning hours. He said they were notified this thing had been recovered in Pennsylvania. It was coming into the base. They brought it in from an entrance they generally don't use, and another person has confirmed that as well. And he said it was very interesting because they backed his flatbed truck with this tarped object into a hangar. And he said the security on the base was even higher than when President Kennedy had visited the base prior to that, and they were given a shoot-to-kill order to anybody approached the hangar without proper authorization. He went on to tell me he wasn't on the team that long, but he heard that it left over in a short time, and it continued on to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base near Fairborn, Ohio, which others have verified to us that, yes, it went to Wright-Patterson, and we even know exactly what building it went to, and it wasn't the famous Hangar 18. It was another building. Now, where it's at today, of course, we really have no idea. But that's just a general scenario. There's so much to the story, and it's fascinating, regardless of what this thing may have been.